I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
I think just hold on to hope, because there's always hope. Even in the darkest times when everything seems so scary.
Blessed with a little girl, the stories of hope and prayer for premature babies as advances in technology help them thrive.
I would tell them, don't be scared, don't be ashamed of where you come from. Nobody is perfect. Everybody needs help, no matter what the situation is.
Testimonies from the nation's capital of mothers finding themselves in need, how one pregnancy center is serving them, especially during the Christmas season.
We really love the pro-life message. It really, it's the center of the mission at each one of our schools.
How some Catholic schools are keeping the pro-life message in the classroom.
The transgender victory is huge because it's really the first time that that's been put into law.
The 2025 National Defense Authorization Act, or NDAA, advances with wins and losses for the pro-life movement. The record $895 billion bill in annual military spending authorizes some pay increases, purchases on military equipment, and more. It will unfortunately still fund abortion travel for service members stationed in states where there are pro-life protections. But it will not cover gender transition surgeries or other dangerous medical interventions for children of service members suffering from gender dysphoria. The use of puberty blockers and surgeries on those suffering from gender dysphoria will continue in Montana after the state Supreme Court affirmed a lower court ruling last week. The Montana law aimed to protect minors from these controversial medical interventions, which have never been proven safe. The state Supreme Court agreed with the lower court judge who ruled that a ban on transgender so-called therapy violates the state's constitutional right to privacy. The case now goes to trial before a district court for further litigation. The United Kingdom is banning puberty blockers indefinitely, following advice of medical experts. The Commission on Human Medicine says there is an unacceptable safety risk in prescribing children puberty blockers. The British government will be opening some 8 new regional centers that offer mental health support for those suffering from gender dysphoria. In yet another interview, President-elect Donald Trump says he will not limit access to the abortion pill. This was in an interview with Time magazine, who named Trump Person of the Year, his words echoing a similar statement he gave in an interview with NBC's Kristen Welker. Chemical abortions account for more than 60% of all abortions in the United States, according to the Guttmacher Institute. Alarming numbers of on abortion coming out of the state of Kansas. Their Department of Health and Environment is reporting a 58% spike in the number of abortions performed in the state in 2023, from some 12,000 abortions in 2022 to more than 19,000 in 2023. A majority of these abortions were out-of-state women traveling to Kansas for an abortion.
It's very troubling, but it's not unexpected. I mean, this is pretty much what we had predicted if we failed to pass value them both.
Kansas was the first state to vote on abortion after the Dobbs ruling. They voted against an amendment that would have said there was no right to an abortion. Archbishop Naumann says the church has increased support for crisis pregnancy centers to meet a growing need. The new frontier of legal battles over abortion and pro-life laws is pitting state against state. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton is suing a New York doctor for prescribing abortion pills to a woman in Texas. Paxton wants Dr. Margaret Carpenter of the Abortion Coalition for Telemedicine to pay upwards of $100,000 for every violation of Texas's pro-life law. Carpenter is not licensed to practice in Texas and is not authorized to practice telemedicine in Texas. Paxton says the patient who received the drugs ended up in the hospital with serious complications, and the life of the unborn child was ended. New York has a SHIELD law that protects providers from out-of-state investigations and prosecutions. Meanwhile, on both sides of the U.S. southern border, life-affirming care is being provided for migrant women. Casa Maris in El Paso, Texas, and Stellar Shelter in Juarez, Mexico, provide safe havens for pregnant women, children, and vulnerable migrant mothers who are seeking asylum in the U.S.
We want to provide life-affirming accompaniment and, you know, of all the various things that women need in pregnancy, what people have said over and over again, that I'm afraid to do this alone. And especially in their journey and their coming, you know, just all the situations that they come across, and knowing that there's somebody there that's going to be there when it comes time to give birth, and through the process of lactation, and through, you know, the newborn stages, that has really been the difference in women saying, I feel really confident in this decision that we made.
The care shelters just found out on the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe, no less, that they will be getting a border vehicle to help take monthly donations of diapers, food, and medical supplies to these shelters. Thanks to life-saving technology, a baby girl in Georgia is getting the support she needs to fight for her life. Advances in neonatal care are helping more and more premature babies survive. EWTN reporter Rossell Rages shares the stories of twins born at 24 weeks old who are now thriving, and baby Mary, who is still fighting for her life.
Our hope is that obviously she comes home healthy and happy, and that we can dedicate her to Mary, because that's why we named her Mary.
Mary Faustina was born on October 19, when she was only 23 weeks old. Tiny and fragile, she weighed a little more than a pound.
She is a fighter. Yeah. The NICU nurses always talk about how feisty she is every time they go in there to do any procedure, even to check on, you know, her heart rate. She's like grabbing them and like trying to help them.
Parents Sandra and Dennis Dillenschneider have been praying for a baby for years. They had their 9-year-old son Alex in 2015, and since then, Sandra has had multiple miscarriages. Due to a medical condition, it is difficult for Sandra to carry a baby full term. While Sandra was grieving the loss of her babies, she discovered Christ through the Catholic Church.
There was a lot going on, and I just felt the call. I needed God, and so I told him that I wanted to go back to church.
In 2023, their prayers were answered. They were expecting once again.
When we found out we were pregnant with Mary, we were very elated. Mm-hmm. And it was a wonderful pregnancy.
Absolutely.
And then at 19 weeks, your water broke.
Yep.
Too early. And Sandy was admitted to the hospital for, you were there for about 4 weeks.
Yeah, at least a month.
Yeah. And then Mary came, because there was no stopping it at that point.
She was 23 weeks and 6 days.
Doctors were able to resuscitate baby Mary Faustina after their second attempt. Since then, she has been in the neonatal intensive care unit, or NICU, in a hospital in Georgia, fighting for her life, while her parents and big brother continue to pray for her. When babies like Mary Faustina are born at 23 weeks, almost every organ is immature, with the lungs and the brain being among the systems most at risk.
Here at Mercy Hospital, we have taken care of 11 babies in the last 2 years that are 23 weeks and below.
Dr. Amy Yen, a neonatologist at Mercy Hospital, explains that 1 week of gestation, or the process of a baby's development while inside the mother's womb, significantly affects the baby's odds of survival.
Every week makes a big difference if you can stay pregnant, as far as the complications with their infant. You know, a baby born at 22 weeks has different survival and comorbidity problems than a 23-weeker or 24 weeks. So seeking that prenatal care is very important to try to prolong your pregnancy as best as possible, and also to get those, you know, antenatal steroids in and other measures to try to give the babies the best chance of a good outcome.
Advances in medicine and technology throughout the years have helped some premature babies survive and overcome health challenges. According to a new study conducted by a University of Rochester Medical Center researcher, the survival rates of extremely preterm babies has increased significantly in the past decade. Survival among actively treated infants was 30% at 22 weeks and 55.8% at 23 weeks.
When I was in fellowship, 24 weeks was kind of the limit, maybe 23 weeks. But, you know, those numbers are decreasing, and 22 weeks is now more of the limit of viability than what it was even 15 years ago. So there's a better chance of a good outcome.
Meet 19-year-old twins Nora and Conley Rohal, walking miracles, as their mother Anne calls them. Both were born at 24 weeks, back when the medical community believed that a baby born before 26 weeks of gestation was unlikely to survive.
Conley was a pound and an ounce, and Nora was a pound and 5 ounces. And they were, you know, we could hold them in the palm of our hands. So it's been quite a journey.
When Anne was 18 weeks pregnant with the twins, she found out she had a rare condition called twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome.
The babies share a placenta, and there's a blood vessel that's irregular, and it causes too much fluid in utero to go to one baby, so that was Nora, and then no fluid for Conley.
Doctors recommended to terminate the pregnancy, as this rare condition is not only life-threatening to her twins, but to Anne as well. Ultimately, Anne chose life. Despite the pain and the risk, Anne did everything in her will to keep her pregnancy. After being admitted to the hospital for almost a month, Anne delivered the twins at 24 weeks.
I remember thinking that there's no way that these babies at 24 weeks will, you know, be crying, or, you know, that they're going to have to be resuscitated. And I remember both of them cried.
The twins stayed in the NICU for 4 months before they were able to go home. While in the hospital, Anne received a lot of spiritual support. There were countless prayer groups for the twins and one particular sister who Anne can never forget.
She was part of the diocese mission at Fairfax Hospital. And when I came down, she was just sitting there quietly praying by their isolettes, and she had put... she'd gotten permission to put rosaries. They had to sterilize them and put them inside their beds. And she was a spitfire. She was just like, don't feel sorry for yourself. These babies are here. You've got to fight. And I remember her saying, when we knew the outcome was going to be good, she's like, you need to tell your story.
For the next 5 years, Nora and Conley were in and out of the hospital for different medical conditions.
I remember saying, I'm not afraid of disability, and I don't want, you know, that's not a reason to me to talk about quality of life. You know, they're here and they were fighting.
Now at 19 years old, both have recently graduated from high school and are attending college.
It's their story, but they're so humble. They don't feel sorry for themselves, right? They're just like, yeah, let's get over that story.
Conley and I, we love each other very, very much, but we've gone through stages where, like, we quarrel, and, like, sometimes we don't get along, but then some days, like, we're just, like, the best of friends.
For both mothers, Sandra and Anne, their faith was a beacon of light through their darkest times.
And then I look at them and I just think, what if somebody hadn't had the advice or the guidance or the support spiritually that I had?
We know that even though these awful things have happened to us and we go through these trials, we know that God can turn something good out of it.
Yes.
Rosal Regis, EWTN, Pro Life Weekly.
Through her experience with the twins, Anne, who is also a healthcare attorney, continues to advocate for patients. Sandra and her husband started a grief support group ministry at their parish in Lithia Springs, Georgia. Advent is a time of waiting for the birth of Christ, and for some women, it's also a time of waiting for the birth of their own child, at times unexpected. We visited a pregnancy center on the Capitol Hill to see how they support moms in need during the Christmas season. Let's take a look.
Hi, this is Janet Durig from the Capitol Hill Pregnancy Center.
The mothers that come to the Capitol Hill Pregnancy Center face a similar situation our Blessed Mother faced, an unexpected pregnancy. But just as the Lord provided for Mother Mary, the center provides for women in need.
Our mission is we always want to be a safe place for a woman to come who is experiencing an unexpected pregnancy.
To achieve that goal, the Capitol Hill Pregnancy Center offers families counseling, pregnancy tests, educational classes, and at this time of year, even Christmas presents.
People are very gracious around the Christmas season. They bring joy to this place, I think, as much as we like to share the joy, they also bring joy to this place.
This year, the center teamed up with a local church on Capitol Hill to create a Christmas market, where more than 10 underprivileged families came to do their holiday shopping for not only their children, but also themselves.
We know that that's as the mother's heart, she really wants to make Christmas special for her kids, but we also want to bless her in return. So she'll get to pick out gifts for her children, just a whole lot of Christmas fun to be able to just make Christmas a magical time for these families.
They're really, really helpful. Even if you don't need stuff right then and there for the baby, they also give stuff for the moms too, like maternity clothes.
The Capitol Hill Pregnancy Center's work is not just during the Christmas season. They stand by these women year-round.
We go through whatever it is. Say she wants to parent, then we talk about what that would look like and how we can help her through that process with our material resources. And then I talk about the parenting classes that we also offer. And yeah, different ways that we can help financially and emotionally. Any way that we can help, we try to help.
These are just a few of the resources the counselors at the Pregnancy Center offer their clients when they come in for an appointment. Each year, about 1,000 women and families come to the Capitol Hill Pregnancy Center to receive counseling and guidance, as well as material needs for their children, from diapers, strollers, and clothes for newborns all the way up until 4 years of age.
We never pressure anybody about their choice, even though we're pro-life. We don't pressure anyone. This is her choice. And we want her to feel educated. And if she says no, we don't force that information. If she said yes, then the client advocate can go through all that with her.
During a counseling session, if a woman chooses not to opt for life, the Capitol Hill Pregnancy Center offers a post-abortion recovery program, sending this message to women.
We are here for you. Our heart and our hope is that they would make a decision for life. But even if they don't, we're going to love them where they're at. And we know that, you know, we follow Christ lead in that, and he comes after us even when we make the wrong choice. And so we want anyone that comes here to know that there's always a place for them here.
One unique aspect of the Capitol Hill Pregnancy Center is their focus on prayer.
What do you have here, this prayer box?
Well, that is what it is. It's a prayer box, and let's see if there's anything in it right now. Yep, we've got two prayer requests, and then we will pray and send it out to the prayer team.
Some of the clients mentioned how much they appreciate the opportunity for prayer in addition to material support.
They pray with you every time you come, and they just give you such a wholesome experience.
They offered support for pregnant moms, such as wet wipes, Pampers, clothing, bottles, essential goods. And also prayer.
But it's not just the spiritual support that keeps the center running. It's the donations and time volunteers put in serving these mothers in need.
Oh, this is so cute.
One of the things that I think makes this this place really unique and special, again, is the all the different people that are involved, from our donors that you know, give monthly and support this place, to our volunteers. We have volunteers that help in all areas of our ministry.
Look at us. What the gift?
An increasing demographic is Spanish-speaking, and one Spanish-speaking volunteer is happy for the opportunity to help them.
I have a heart for the people that are Spanish-speaking, and I know that there's lots going on in their lives, and so for me to be able to come here and serve them is an opportunity that I appreciate.
During the Christmas season and all year, the Capitol Hill Pregnancy Center seeks to serve Christ in these women who find themselves unable to provide for their children.
I really feel like this is a picture of the body of Christ, of people coming together, no matter the denomination or church that they go to, but just under the name of Christ, that we can serve and love people well is really beautiful.
To learn more about their services and to support the Capitol Hill Pregnancy Center, visit CapitolHillPregnancyCenter.org. Coming up, combating the secular message on abortion in the classroom. We speak with the Dominican Sisters of St. Cecilia about how they tackle pro-life issues in their schools. We'll be right back. Welcome back to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Our program continues with how the pro-life message is shared in schools. I had the opportunity to sit down with the Dominican Sisters of St. Cecilia of Nashville, who stopped by our studios here in D.C. to tell us about how they integrate the pro-life message in the classroom. Sisters, thank you so much for being here with us today at the studio. So I just kind of wanted to ask you guys, how do you integrate the pro-life witness in your schools?
So in our schools, we certainly are integrating that pro-life witness in lots of different ways. We're Dominican Sisters of St. Cecilia, so for us it's really important integrating both the mind and the heart, mm-hmm. that we see faith and reason as a true unity. And so we want to help our students to know the truth, and so we talk about all the issues that are under the umbrella of the pro-life movement. But equally important, I think, is helping our students to have a heart for the people who are the faces behind this issue. Amen. And so we bring in, you know, in a lot of the high schools where we teach, mm-hmm. we have guest speakers as varied as a young woman who may be suffering trauma after an abortion, or perhaps a young woman who made the choice to keep her baby. Mm. Maybe all kinds of different things. One time that we had a speaker who herself had survived an abortion and really felt that her life was a gift from Almighty God. So I think when our students can see the face, right, of the pro-life issue, and certainly we take our students to the March for Life in Washington from so many of the schools in which we teach. We also are often involved with pro-life marches and rallies on the state level. In Houston, Texas, there is a student-led initiative in the city of Houston. Our students don't organize it, but it's called the Survivors March, and some of the students participate in that, just to really, that they recognize their life as a gift, and they want to celebrate and thank God for that, and also witness to that in the larger culture.
And so have you found that this younger generation is more or less receptive to the pro-life message than prior ones?
I think overall, we find actually more receptive. Now, certainly there's some pushback, certainly there's some difficulties, but overall, I think that the young people trust us to tell them the truth, and the truth itself, of course, has that appeal and is beautiful, and so when it's presented in a way that you can sort of respects you, there are definitely, there's a hunger. I think in the darkness, the light shines brighter. I know in a lot of our high schools, we focus as well on philosophy or bioethics to really show students in a very calm, very reasonable, mm-hmm. Critical thinking kind of way, the beauty, the dignity of the human person, and what it makes sense, mm-hmm. how to treat a person, and what it does not make sense, how to treat a human person. And we've had a lot of success with that, and lives changed, really.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Now, nonprofits like Life Action and the John Paul II Life Center have developed curriculums to show you a glimpse inside the womb. Have you guys used these resources, or do you use your own?
We use any good resources that we can find. So some of our sisters have used some of the resources of which you're speaking. Some of them have used curriculums like Rural Woods, which provides a basically pre-K through high school theology, the body-based curriculum. One of our sisters had mentioned that she shows this beautiful video that shows the stages of human development, life in the womb. And in the background is a classical music playing. So this whole idea of the beauty and the miracle of human life, and she said her students always respond so positively to that. I also think the advances in technology, the availability of ultrasounds and MRIs that really help students to see what that little life in utero looks like and how the beautiful development that God has planned from all eternity for this immortal soul, and to be able to see that, to see pictures of it, or to see little models, 3D models in the classroom.
And now, so how has the shift in culture, mainly increasing secularization, the rise in divorce, attacks on the family unit, impacted how you guys create a Catholic environment in your schools?
I think it's important, and we talked about this, that a Catholic school has always been important, is a real climate of a family. And that's, I think, just even more important than it's ever been. And so our schools really are that, and the church asks for that climate in Catholic schools, where students feel known and wanted and loved, and from the moment they come. And so that's super important. And I know, Sister, we talked also about all the different ways that our sisters reach out to families through retreats, through different curriculum that we've developed, our virtues and practice curriculum. Mm-hmm. And just any way we can to serve the family and to serve the parents.
Yes.
And
those attacks on the family, I think they're real. Mm-hmm. And we recognize that sometimes students come to us bearing the wounds of a broken family, for example, or perhaps not feeling loved, even though their family has given them every material thing. And the church documents always speak about Catholic schools having a home-like environment and being a place of welcome. And as Sister mentioned, that really is what we are seeking for our students, that when they walk in the doors of the Catholic school, they really are sensing a place, a haven, a place of where they are going to be known and loved, where their unique, unrepeatable gifts are going to be noticed and celebrated. And that in itself, I think, is perhaps the greatest pro-life message that we can give.
And when we talk about pro-life, it's hard not to talk about, I just think one of the best parts of Catholic education is that we are more and more inviting in students with intellectual disabilities. Mm-hmm. And I know in some of our schools, we have an options program in our high schools where we have students with intellectual disabilities. And I can tell you from firsthand experience, they are the hugest part of our pro-life culture. Mm-hmm. You watch the students, you know, be peer mentors, decide to go into serving them, you know, go into special ed as their vocation. Just the light and the beauty that those students are to the other students, and they catch that light and that beauty and that pro-life. And I think that's, you know, spreading through through Catholic education more and more. We're able to do that, and it's just so wonderful.
Well, thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Abby.
And for your witness and your yes to the Lord.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, ewtn.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift.